You're with Earshot here on RN. Kirsty Melville here with you. And now, while the Berlin of Barry Kosky and many other Australian expats is a modern and very hip city, it still bears the scars of those years of separation between West Berlin and the communist East along the Berlin Wall. The most famous border point along the wall was Checkpoint Charlie. American GIs at Charlie stood facing the Soviet army and the East German police with just a few yards between them. While they were waiting for real combat, they played an intense psychological war with one another, incessantly amping up the degree of provocation. This piece is the extraordinary testimony of two American servicemen who spent years guarding Checkpoint Charlie. Edward and Vern manifest a curious nostalgia for a time and place when they were eyeballing an enemy who had them literally surrounded and vastly outnumbered.
Und wie sieht es jetzt am Sektorengrenzübergang Friedrichstraße aus?
The military police always had a backup alert squad, and I was assigned alert squad that particular day, August 13th.
In Berlin, military police were responsible for the security of the American sector.
We were headed to Friedrichstrasse, and when we arrived at Checkpoint Charlie, we were told that East Germans would not let any vehicles go through the checkpoint. In that time, we was prepared for anything that may would have happened.
The engineers in Berlin Command constructed a platform for us that was attached to a trailer that was elevated some 7 or 8 feet above the street level. And that became our initial Checkpoint Charlie. Checkpoint Alpha was in Helmstedt.
A, Alpha in Helmstedt, in Lower Saxony.
Checkpoint Bravo was in Berlin.
B, Bravo, in Dreilinden, in the southwest. And C.
Obviously, the next checkpoint was Charlie. About 2 weeks after that, in early to mid-September, the engineer people had constructed for us a shack that was constructed in the middle of the Friedrichstrasse, where we stationed a sergeant and an NP.
Weiter hinten am Halleschen Tor sind noch einige amerikanische Einheiten. Sie liegen dort in Bereitschaft. Sie haben es sich gemütlich gemacht.
Berlin is having fun with the GIs.
Und für die Berliner ist es beinahe so etwas wie ein Volksfest. Sie dürfen auf die Panzer klettern.
Kids climbing into jeeps.
Und es ist ein recht familiäres Leben.
A real street festival.
Was hat sie da gemacht? Die Leiche aus der Meisenstraße.
The information came back that little by little they were extending the walls right through the populated areas, knocking out windows and dividing the city. And we just stood back and nobody had any idea what was going on at that particular time. They kept laying bricks and concrete blocks and whatever. I don't know with the amount of troops what we could have really done. They were bringing in extra infantry and the tankers were coming.
Aber auch in der Zimmerstraße, rechts und links.
But along what was Zimmerstraße,
arbeiten Kräne im Scheinwerferlicht und
we noticed these workers from the Soviet side were digging post holes in the middle of the street, and then they were putting cement posts in those holes and tying them together with Stacheldraht, with barbed wire. And then they were reinforcing the barbed wire with more barbed wire behind that.
The barbed wire studio. A VW bus with oversized loudspeakers, standing immediately on the western side of the building site.
At this time, Allied military personnel had total free, unimpeded access between the sectors.
We had direct contact with the Soviets every day. Those were the people we worked with. We operated all of the checkpoints.
Things began to change when East Berlin authorities wanted to exercise more and more control over the Soviet sector of Berlin and began to restrict access of allies into and out of Berlin.
And we were watching the Russians as they came through. We had to make sure that they were safe. We couldn't let individuals start throwing debris or whatever at them, so we more or less had to protect them.
One of the first times after the barricades went up and the Soviets had a bus through The Berliners threw rotten eggs and tomatoes at them.
Jedes Mal, wenn ein sowjetischer Wagen hier herüberfährt, an den Berlinern vorbei, die an der Kochstraße, Ecke Friedrichstraße, hinter Absperrseilen stehen, Pfui-Rufe ertönen.
The next evening, I walked in front of the Soviet bus with my MP regalia on, and all you got from the Berliners was stoned silence.
After the wall went up, we were definitely in a tactical mode, in battle fatigue. The infantry were on full-scale alert, and they were backing us up down at the Friedrichstraße.
Berlin was a beautiful, beautiful tour of duty.
Big names coming through Charlie. The movie star Glenn Ford.
I just missed him, but the actor Glenn Ford came through. But a week later, I did get a thrill of a lifetime because the actress, Angie Dickinson, she came through.
Angie Dickinson.
When she came through, seemed like the whole street stopped. Because that was one of the most beautiful women I ever saw in my life. And even the East German police stopped and looked. She walked across the line.
The white line dividing east and west.
So that was really a historic moment in my life. Another piece of history in my life. I met my wife on October 6th, 1961, on Friedrichstrasse. I was on duty. I saw this pretty German girl there. I didn't do away from my duty. All I did was talk to her a few words, a couple words of German I knew, a couple words of English. And we made a date for that evening. That amounted to about 3 minutes. And I told her where the MPs hang out at Lulu Bar there in Steglitz.
Steglitz in southwest Berlin.
Berlin was a beautiful, beautiful tour of duty.
My Brigadier General was Charles D'Orsa. He made it very, very clear, as he used to say, stand tall on the Kudamm.
The Kudamm, Berlin's central shopping boulevard.
The only way that you will leave the city, if the balloon ever goes up, is as a prisoner, or you'll be killed.
We got a call to go pick up this refugee, young East German railroad policeman, I would say about 26. And he sat in the back with the German policeman. I wasn't supposed to do this, but I said to my German policeman, I said, I'm going to take him down through the Kudamm. And I did.
Es ist so ganz anders, wie man uns geschildert hat, wie wir uns West-Berlin, Westdeutschland vorgestellt haben.
It's not like they told him. In the east.
And he had tears coming down his eyes.
Man sagt eben, hier wird für den Krieg gerüstet und alles steckt man rein in der Rüstung.
He never in his wildest dream ever saw anything like that.
Doch bloß wenn man mit offenen Augen sich die Straßen angucken tut, das ist hier so lebendig, also das ist wie im Schlaraffenland.
A refugee in the land of milk and honey.
And I'll never forget this till the day I die. My German policeman opened up his lunch and he gave him an orange. And this East German railroad policeman had never seen an orange in his life.
In the summer of 1961, there was a great famine in East Germany. So all of our soldiers would go on this patrol with apples and oranges, and they would stop for a break. And they'd look around, if they see any Vopos on the other side, they would take the oranges and the apples and they'd roll them under the barbed wire. And these Vopas, you know, like animals would come scrounging for this stuff.
Vopos, the East German police.
We did it on purpose. We played psychological warfare. Once in a while, the Vopos would get nasty. And so sometimes our soldiers, instead of taking an orange or an apple, would take an M25 baseball grenade, which is a tear gas grenade. They'd pop it, and they'd roll it under the barbed wire.
We received a call from the German police that there were some refugees trying to swim across the Kleine Wannsee.
Little Wannsee Lake, separating the two Berlins in the southwest.
From Potsdam, Babelsberg, to the Grunewald area. It's called the Brücke der Einheit, the Freedom Bridge, but we called it Alpha 10. It was one of our checkpoints. Our Berlin police came up and said, there are some people in the water in a bathtub, and they're trying to come across, and the other people are shooting at them. The guards came over and said, Lieutenant, we got a problem. What should we do? They took me down to the water's edge, and lo and behold, there was a bathtub in the water, and it was coming out of the Kleine Wannsee. There was a woman in a bathtub, and she was being propelled by her husband across the water. And the East Germans were taking pot shots at the bathtub. And my driver and I went down. We took some of our clothes off, and it was in February. It was colder than hell. And I told the West Berlin police they're going to have to lay down some covering fire for us. All they had were carbines. They were not allowed to have rifles. The Berlin police were not supposed to be armed. Well, God love them, they started popping their carbines. My driver and I worked our way into the water. We didn't have to swim very far because by now they were paddling like crazy. And just as we got to the bathtub, the man that was pushing the bathtub was shot and obviously killed. There was a woman inside this bathtub, and there was a baby that apparently they had chloroformed because it looked like it was asleep or unconscious. And we pulled them out and put them in the MP sedan and ran them down Berliner Chaussee to the 279 Station Hospital.
About 2 weeks after the barricade was established at Checkpoint Charlie, I see this figure walking down the middle of the Friedrichstrasse through the barricades, saluting the Vopos and the Russians as he goes by. And he walks up to the white line, and he collapses. He was a high school drama teacher in Berlin East, and he had gone to a costume shop, and he'd gotten an old Ike jacket from World War II that had an 8th Air Force patch on it and corporal stripes. And he'd taken two copper discs, and with a nail, he etched U.S. on them and attached them to the collar. He's walking down saluting. Well, they thought he was a G.I. Two Vopos come up and they grab him by the legs to pull him back into East Berlin. He's a Flüchtlinger. We've got to get him back. Two of those MPs grabbed him by the arms and the shoulders, and they're in a tug of war. And my sergeant comes out of Checkpoint Charlie, and he runs down there and takes his MP billy club, and he bops the two Vopos over the heads, and they go, ouch! And the American MP pull the guy into West Berlin. Like I said, they were having great difficulty with food over in the East. This one particular fall morning, our mess truck drives down Friedrichstrasse, and he goes over to the Soviet sector, and he turns around, and he drives back in to the American sector with the back end of the truck facing the east. Drops the tailgate, and he opens up the Marmite cans, which have all the food in it. And the GIs come out with their mess kits. And old Pappy Latrell, the mess sergeant, is up there slopping the food in. And this warm food and this hot coffee odor is wafting over into the east. We did it on purpose. We played psychological warfare.
Even even after the wall went up, we still had major, major probes going over every hour into the Soviet sector of Berlin to keep an eye on troop deployment. The East Germans didn't like that because they were trying to exert their power and influence by saying, you know, we're in charge, blah, blah, blah.
When our American vehicles would go over into the East, the Volpos would sometimes smash out their headlights or break a window, do other kinds of physical harassment as well as emotional harassment, trailing you, stopping you. When they would do this, we would play tit for tat.
We really had a lot of harassment games. For soldiers, one of the exciting games was what we called the boxing operation.
When we knew the Soviet vehicles were coming, we put another barrier up on Kochstrasse, which meant they could only turn right. They were behind these old bombed-out buildings, and they were no longer visible over in the communist side of Berlin. We had two MP vehicles, and one would pull in front of the Soviets and one behind them, and they would box him in. The MPs had strict orders. Leave your vehicle, lock it, and go back to Checkpoint Charlie and get a cup of coffee. I remember one time we kept them for 7 hours. Tit for tat.
There was a babe that used to talk to us at night down at Checkpoint Charlie from the Soviet side.
Annette Teslisch, a.k.a. Moscow Molly, daughter of an American defector to the East.
And she used to come on like at midnight, and she'd tell the MPs at Checkpoint Charlie, she'd say, come on over, you MPs from Checkpoint Charlie. She had a nice voice and everything.
When we were down there at night doing our duty, the Volpos would meticulously copy down our name tags. And so when Moscow Molly, whatever the hell her name was, would come on the air, she'd start reading off the names of the GIs that were on duty that night. She'd want to know, how are you doing? How's your love life? You know, isn't this ridiculous that you're spending all this amount of time here? Well, you could be back with your wife or sweetheart. We would turn up our GI radios so that she knew that we were listening to her. God love her, we wanted to give her every opportunity.
We had one of our MPs defect. He was in my platoon. Later, they brought his body back to Checkpoint Charlie and put it across the line. Because he was no good to them anymore.
Moscow Molly, signing off for tonight, boys. Time for my theme song. Oh, give me land, lots of land under starry skies above. Don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wide open country that I love. Don't fence me in. You can stay at Checkpoint Charlie while your duty calls you. Even though the daily army grind just galls you, you get out of hand and the Red Army'll maul you. We'll fence you in. Yes, we'll fence you in.
The highlight of my life was the assignment to Berlin. It was very, very dramatic.
There it goes, the little prefabricated hut, always meant to be a temporary structure with the American, British and French flags on it, up into the air on the end of a huge red crane.
When I meet my maker, if he's up there, I would want to live my 4 years that I served in Berlin over again.
The Berliners, whose houses come very close to the checkpoint, are leaning out of their windows. Some are clapping, others are in tears. There's one banner that reads, "What a shame, dear Checkpoint Charlie."
I'm I love Berlin. Great city. People were nice to me. It was a clean city.
Und kurz nach 11 dann war diese Zeremonie hier beendet. Die Außenminister fuhren zu den 2+4 Gesprächen, die rund
The Checkpoint Charlie ceremony is over. Foreign ministers and camera teams pack up and go home.
In der Friedrichstraße der Zeremonie beiwohnten, auch sie gingen wieder nach Hause. Die Friedrichstraße hier am Checkpoint Charlie ist jetzt frei. Das weiße Zollhäuschen ist weg.
The street is unencumbered for the first time in 20 years. Checkpoint Charlie is gone.
Nightlife for a young soldier was beautiful. The parks, Wannsee, all the soldiers love Wannsee, Wannsee Lake, the Funk Term. The day that that wall came down, I called my wife up. We both cried like a baby. Because I said, that is part of my home. Berlin will be embedded in my life forever. And God bless all the Berliners. God bless all of you.
Was mich noch interessieren würde, ist, wie denn so die Stimmung innerhalb des Hauses am Checkpoint Charlie ist.
How are things over at Checkpoint Charlie?
Dieses Haus am Checkpoint Charlie ist im Prinzip dunkel.
All gone dark.
Edward Hamborski and Vern Pike, two soldiers on the Berlin Wall in 1961. And that was an excerpt from a piece called Blues for Checkpoint Charlie. The soundtrack was by Dominic Muldowney, one of Britain's leading contemporary composers. And it was originally produced for RN by Dominic, David Marowitz and Sharon Davis. You can find more information about the story on the Earshot page at the RN website.